Screams filled the silent morning air, the kind of screams that curdle the blood, breathe chills down the skin, and raise hairs on the back of your neck. In that moment, the question is, what do you do? Some will stand in silence, and others will go running towards the cries for mercy. Those who go running know what they are going to find. It will likely be horrific, and you'll be lucky if that person is alive at all. But you know in your bones that you have to do what you can to help. On a quiet and safe trail, when screams rose above the calm and shattered the peaceful expectations of the visitors, those who went running would be left with more questions than answers. But that answer would come 36 years later on the other side of the country, and thanks to the thing that people love or hate, technology. Welcome back to Tragedy with a View. I am your host, Kayla, and Caitlin is back with me for try number two of this episode because we had some technical difficulties a couple days ago and got Caitlin's voice loud and clear, and mine was non-existent. So
Oh no.
we're here again. So if this sounds a little bit less emotional, it's because we've both already been through it. And on the plus side, though, that'll probably lead us to some better conversations because we kind of already know where this is going. And something that, didn't click right away with us when we did this the first time is it kind of is able to come through today. So, real quick housekeeping. Patreon members are going to get access to merch on January 28th. It is a Sunday, and you are going to get a passcode to be able to enter into the website. I will also be sending the link and putting that in Patreon. It will also be on the website, so you can access it those multiple different ways. It will be available to everyone on February 1st. Along with February 1st, Patreon members are getting an exclusive episode, and I am working on Apple subscriptions, so that way you have access to that exclusive episode as well. There's a couple of like approval checkpoints I need to get through first, though, so hopefully those will go through in time. And with this particular episode, I want to give a warning that this episode has graphic details, and we're going to be talking about murder and sexual assault and suicide. And if that's something that doesn't sit well with you, please skip this episode. I'll also get, when I get to the point where it's like the really graphic details, I'll give you a second warning. So if you want to listen to information, but you don't want to know the gruesome parts, I'll give you information when we get to there, so that way you're able to either skip or you can turn it off at that point. If you are skipping this one, I'll see you in 2 weeks. We're going to do something a little bit lighter. And the Patreon episode is also on the lighter side of things. So, and then also, I didn't put this in the last one, but I thought about it and I thought maybe I should. But because we are going to be talking a little bit about suicide, I wanted to put in a little note that if you are having suicidal thoughts, either present day or in the future, please call the suicide hotline number. It is 988. And in case no one's told you lately, your life is worthy, and I appreciate you being here.
I have thoughts. Okay, so I did a daily morning meditation the other morning, and it made me cry because it said, you are the missing puzzle piece the world needs. And I was like, that everyone needs to hear that every morning. I love that.
Yeah, life is worth it. Even when it's hard and even when it's really difficult. And I've never been on like I just kind of like I joke about it, but I don't think I'm really joking. I think I'm serious, but like I just don't think my brain is hardwired for depression. Like I just am always looking at the positive sides and always asking, you know, how does life get better? Like it doesn't matter if something good or bad is happening. I'm like, okay, how does this get better? Like this is the way life is for me. But I was on the, I guess, other side of it because my ex-husband was suicidal at one point, and that was a very, very scary time. And I don't know how to comprehend that it had nothing to do with, you know, what I was doing or what I wasn't doing or the situations that we were in. There was a chemical imbalance in his brain, and that needed to be addressed. And until that was addressed, he spiraled out of control on multiple different occasions. And I don't know what kept him here. Again, he's my ex-husband. It's not my story to tell, but I think he got the help that he needed, or at least I hope that he got the help that he needed, and he's not just walking around super depressed and suicidal at times. But yeah, the you are the missing puzzle piece, and it's not necessarily just like in life in general, but also in another person's life. You might be what they needed to project themselves down the path that they want to go on and where they're meant to be, and they might not have the courage if they never meet you. So I like that. So we are going to be talking about an event that occurred on the Thumb Butte Trail, which is a trail located in a recreation area outside of Prescott, Arizona. Thumb Butte Trail is, according to all trails, only 2 miles long and loop style. And I actually looked up the map of it, and you can actually either go on a loop, and so you would start and end at the same point by taking the trail like all the way around, or there's like a lookout area that you can go like to that spot and then turn around and come back, and it's like a more straight line, the which I thought was an interesting thing that they have like a main part to the trail, and then from there you can take two options back.
Yeah, I have a loop trail near my house, and I feel like my loop trail is very small, but it's longer than 2 miles. So I'm like, wow, that's really short.
It is very short. It is rated a moderate trail, so it's somewhat difficult. The pictures that I saw looks like there's some elevation changing and some climbing kind of necessary to go down the trail.
I'm not like a woodsy kind of girl, but is there like, depending on the rating of the trail, is there like park rangers there to assist people? Like if it's hard, are there definitely like a number of people there watching for safety and stuff, like lifeguards, or how does
No,
that
there
work?
is not. So Sam and I, when we went to Zion National Park, there's a section called Angel's Landing that, so there's this rock formation that kind of acts as a ridge, and you walk along the ridge to get up to Angel's Landing. This ridge is like a couple feet wide max at certain points. And they have a chain that was installed so that way you can hold on to it as you're going up that ridge. But no, there's no one there to like help you or shuffle you around or whatnot. And I mean, I think that's good in some aspects, but also bad in others, because like not having those people there doesn't give you like a false sense of confidence. Like I know there's some people who like if they have someone there that's like a professional, they'll just like feel more confident and maybe push themselves too hard into doing something that they wouldn't be comfortable doing otherwise. But also, it's not so good because if something happens, help is a long way off. And some of the places in the world are very hard to access, and that means help is a very long way off.
Yeah, I don't like that. I think every wood should have forest lifeguards. Have one posted for every, I don't know, square amount of feet. I don't know. Every mile gets its own lifeguard. Or something.
The manpower needed for that would be
Well,
astonishing.
like I was telling you about Texas summers, I got like halfway through my trail, which is flat. It's not like it's dangerous, but my park ranger goes around on a golf cart type thing every hour, and it was perfect timing because for me, because I was about to pass out, and he me pat back to my car. So who knows how long I would have been there or what would have happened if I didn't get driven back. So that thing of situations like that. Like what if you're diabetic and pass out or something? I mean, I don't know. I'm not diabetic, but I'm just thinking of other people.
I mean, there's a lot that can happen, and I think,
Like, look at 127 hours. He did not tell anyone. There were no forest lifeguards where he was going. Like, this is a message. Oh, no, what rule number one, don't go to some remote place if you know it's beyond your skill set.
And that's like a big thing, is like, just knowing what you're getting yourself into and then being prepared for it. So like, I personally don't have any medication that I need to be on, like, and I hope that stays that way forever. I hope I never have to be on medication to just live. But that is a good point that even if your plan, like if you go out and you're like a recreational hiker and you go out and you're like, yeah, I'm gonna be out for the whole day, maybe plan that you might be out there overnight, because it would be better to be prepared for that than to get in a situation where you're stuck and you don't have what you need, and then you become a story on my podcast.
And you're cutting your arm off, and you know, like it's like I don't know, I've heard this quote in so many different ways, but like, you know how people are like, fear God, like fear and respect nature, like is beyond you, especially with like water accidents. Like so many water accidents happen because people have overconfidence in their abilities with around water. But water is very dangerous.
Is.
So I even know someone who's a skilled s swimmer who drowned when I was a teenager. So yeah.
That's rough. Yeah, being prepared and knowing. I think the other one of the motivations that I had with starting this podcast was to kind of inspire people to act smarter when they are out in nature and act more respectfully and pay attention to what's going on around them, because that can be what saves your life. But then there's also the other side of it that you can be prepared, you can know everything, you can be paying attention, you can make all of the right moves, and the events that show up are insurmountable. And that is an unfortunate reality and a risk that everyone takes on a daily basis. I mean, you get behind the wheel of a car, you're taking risks. This trail, I don't remember if I said it or not, this trail normally takes about 1 hour to 1.5 hours to complete. So it's not a super long trail. It's not, I mean, it's considered moderate, but it's not super technical. There's paved sections to it, if not entirely paved. So it's manageable. The recreation area has hikes, trails for hiking, trail riding, mountain biking, rock climbing, and then some more family-friendly picnic and camping areas. and it is located near Prescott National Forest. This forest is made up of ginormous ponderosa pines, unique rock formations, and has tons of wildlife, including deer, mountain lions, bobcats, coyotes, foxes, snakes, lizards, and an assortment of birds. On June 12th of 1987, Kathy Sposito met up with friends for dinner and mentioned to them that she was going to be hiking at the Thumb Butte Trail the following morning. And this would be the last time that her friends would ever see or talk to her alive. Around 7 a.m. the following morning on June 13th, Kathy rode her bike to the head of the trail, where she then got off of her bike, locked it to the bike rack that was located near the trail, and started her hike. Those who saw her noted that she had on really brightly colored shorts and a bright biking helmet, which is good. You want to be seen when you're out there, right? Kathy was 23 years old. She was living in Prescott, Arizona, while going to Prescott College, and she grew up and graduated from high school in Brooklyn, New York. So this area provided her with an adventurous outlet that she didn't have back in New York. Kathy was there alone, but there were several other hikers out this morning. And a little while later, those who were hiking in the area heard screams erupt. Depending on the source, some will say that specifically three people heard her scream, but they didn't rush to help her. And then other sources say that there were an unidentified number of people who heard her scream and started running in her direction. Because the terrain is extremely dense and there's tall pines climbing towards the sky everywhere, the only option people have is to go down the trail itself. They can't like cut over or through the bushes and whatnot. That's not an option.
Right. She does one, tells people where she's going to be, when she's going to be there, and two, brightly colored clothing. So we get someone who's like at least considering safety. She's not some, someone naive thinking, oh, so.
Yeah, I agree. It took the people who went to investigate about 20 minutes to come upon a really gruesome scene, and they found that they unfortunately did not get there in time and immediately called authorities. And something that I brought up in our first attempt of recording this episode was that I don't know how much time passed between people finding Kathy's body and immediately calling authorities,
We're
because
not
it's not.
that old. We're not that old. We don't know the technology of that time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like I know cell phones didn't get popular until like mid late 90s. Is it possible that somebody had a cell phone on them there? Maybe. Did
Service providers be as like widespread to give service to those people out in the middle of nowhere? We don't know. Probably not.
right. Yeah, that was another question. I also tried to look up to see if there might have been like a payphone or a service center at the trailhead, and I couldn't find anything conclusive about that. So I think the best way to describe what occurred was that somebody decided that they needed to call the police and they left to go do that. That was the next thing that they were going to do. Whether that included getting in the car and driving to a gas station, I don't know. But when I say immediately, I'm going to assume that there was some lapse of time in there.
So let's just say if they're doing it quick, it's like 20 minutes she's laying waiting to be discovered, and then 20 minutes till they find a phone. So that's 40 minutes, bare
Yeah.
minimum.
So if you're listening and you are wanting to skip the really gruesome part, go ahead and skip ahead like 30-ish seconds So what authorities found when they arrived on scene was that Kathy had only hiked a few hundred yards down the trail and that she had likely been ambushed, hit in the head with a rock and a wrench. She was then raped before she was stabbed so hard in the side of the head that her skull was split. And then this was followed by being shot in the eye with a 22 caliber pistol. The bullet, however, did not pierce her skull and enter the brain, so I guess that's a little bit of solace that maybe that's not any solace at all. That's, I mean, you're enduring that as well.
I'm trying to put myself in her shoes. So like I don't know what I would feel obviously in this situation, but for some reason what's coming to mind is pissed off. Like if I'm well, I saw photos of this Thumbview Trail. It's so dense. It's the perfect place. You're basically you can't be seen the second you step foot behind these huge, thick trees. So it's the perfect place to get lost in, but it's like he was able to rape her, and like that would just piss me off so much that I would be like, I don't know. Like, if you're angry, would that start the adrenaline? And then maybe you couldn't feel as much, like you'd be a little numb because doesn't adrenaline like numb things? I don't know. But I mean, I've also heard that even when your adrenaline rush, like the will to live is very strong for some people. So. You won't know till you're in that moment. I've also heard that that's like you don't know if you're a fighter or a flighter, fight or flight until you're faced with it.
Yeah, and I'm sure she was clearly a fighter. I mean, when you look at the timeline of it, I'm going to assume that she started screaming the moment the attack started.
Yeah,
Like
right?
as soon as she realized like this guy was intending to harm her, she started screaming. If it took people 20 minutes from the time they first heard her screams, which may or may not have been the initial screams, I don't know. We will never know. I am so curious how long the attack took to incapacitate her enough that he could rape her. And then, I mean, I don't know, depending on the guy, I guess, there's time needed to actually go through with those acts.
Well, I mean, we both can have some experience on, you said he was what, 16? I mean,
Yes.
16-year-old boy, that was probably quick.
Probably.
So there's that, but it's also like I learned in body language, like the voice, there's a term for it, but like there's different types of screams. And when you're really scared, like it's universal. Everyone can like hear it and they'll run. So it makes me wonder, is it so thick it's muffled that people can't hear her? Is it like people are just like, I don't want to deal with it? I mean, if I heard someone's like blood curdling screaming, yeah, I would definitely figure out what's going on.
I would want to know what's going on just because I'm nosy. Like,
Because you're nosy.
I'm nosy. Like, well, so part of me, like, I
Yeah, like
have,
this. Running.
like, I mean, part of it is like, okay, I do think there's something to it about the type of scream, and you just know something is wrong. But I think there's also like an initial question that you might have that like, is this a person who actually needs help? Are they goofing off with friends and someone pushed them down? Like, what, like, you might question like, does this person actually need help, or are they just making a lot of noise? And it's like
That's
once
what I
you.
was saying is with the different type of screams, you can't fake it. Like if you're because fear is like you can't fake that kind of scream, but you can tell the difference. But I think for me, my biggest concern would be, am I equipped to handle what I'm about to run into? Like,
There is
am I
that
running
too.
into an attack where I can't do anything? Am I, Can I do something if I run in there? Like, is a third person like me just being there to witness it going to help stop something? You know, it depends on what it is. Because I'm not physically strong. I'm not going to be able to overpower anyone. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, as I've gotten older and now I have a child, I always have circling in the back of my head, like, if something happens to me, my child doesn't have a parent. And that's like the overpowering thing. Like I used to be so strong-willed, and now I'm just like passive, like whatever. Like I absolutely still have an attitude, and there's still some sass there, and there's still the drive to fight if the situation calls for it. But if the situation doesn't call for it, absolutely not. Like there's no reason for me to get involved in something that's not necessary, because that's not going to only affect my life, but that's going to affect my child's life and the way that he grows and the way that he views the world. And I am doing everything in my capacity to make sure that that is as positive of an experience as possible. So, like, I am also with you there, like on the, do I want to help? Yes. What can I do to help is the question, because I physically, I would consider myself strong.
Like I could easily become a second victim and make it worse, and then we're both, it's like jumping in the well, like, okay, now
Yes.
we're both here. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, so we're gonna segue back. It and we mentioned, Kathy was a fighter, and that was clear because there was a trail of blood 125 feet long that she left behind as she tried to escape. And she also had defensive wounds all over her body. So she really did everything that she could to fight this kid off of her. The wrench was left behind at the scene, and nobody had any idea who might have done this to Kathy. No one on the trail that day saw anyone who was acting suspiciously, and they didn't see anyone who had a wrench. And the people who came to her aid didn't see anyone else coming down the trail. They didn't see anyone when they passed that section of the trail earlier in the day. And so, because of this, there were no leads. They had no idea who might have done this. And with the limited technology advancements that we have today, the case went cold. Despite this, the town never forgot, and posters and flyers were hung everywhere asking for information that may lead to Kathy's murder being solved. And most recently, that reward was set at $10,000. So from 1987 through 2023, there were posters hung all over town asking for any sort of information that might lead to knowing who did this to her, which I think is a cool, gives you confidence that people actually want to solve things that happened before it might have affected them.
I love those cases that are faith in humanity like restored, because I've seen so many cases where it's like one was he was a child, and so when his it was a friend of his like sister or something, and he grew up and like 30 years later he's a cop and he solved it. So I was like, that's just so like that it affected him, that he cared about her, you know,
Yeah.
because it's like the community comes together, and like we were saying, you're a puzzle piece. You still affect people, even if you don't talk to them, even if you know they know of you through like a fourth, fifth person removed. Like you ripple through people's lives. Like everyone's connected. Just imagine we're all holding hands, kumbayaing, and like if you don't like being touched, too bad. We're holding hands. We need you as the puzzle piece. Have you ever tried to do a jigsaw puzzle and then there's the last piece that's not there? Frustrating.
Yes,
Don't do it.
it is. So then also while I was kind of re-evaluating for this second go round, I found a source. And
Ooh,
I
juicy.
don't know how accurate this is. So I'm gonna just preface this with like it might have just been somebody trying to cause some drama, but it's kind of humorous.
Love drama.
Also, if it's true, very unfortunate. If this is true, I don't have words. The medical examiner made a mistake while running the DNA test and somehow got his own DNA mixed in with it. And so he was initially a suspect because he got his own DNA mixed in. And then it was because of this that the DNA collected was labeled as unusable because they weren't able to pull apart like all of the different DNA strands. And they kept these on file,
Oh my God.
but they couldn't use them.
Straight to jail. Straight to jail.
You made a mistake. Why would you do this?
I mean, worst DNA tester person ever. I've never even heard of a case of that happening.
That's a cardinal rule, is like you do all of the things to make sure your own stuff doesn't end up contaminating everything else.
Maybe he's just one of those people who's like super messy and like he knows where the purple pen is under the blanket, under the box of Kleenex or something. And he's just like, whoops, it all mixes together. Whatever.
Yeah. So like I said, it might have just been like the article making stuff up, or like taking some precedent with whatever information they found and expanding on it in a way that's not fully accurate. But I thought it was an interesting
Fan fiction,
explanation. It could be, yeah. But I thought it was an interesting explanation as to why the DNA samples weren't really useful at the time. It makes
I will say, in cold cases, I see a lot of whoops, the evidence got lost. Whoops, like that happened. I mean, cold cases go cold, like. The time it takes for a case to go cold is such a short window. So it's like when that evidence, the longer it sits, the least chance of it getting solved. So that's why these cold cases are such miracles. And like the mistakes with evidence do happen because it's hard to like maintain them.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't until November 2022, 35 years later, that the body of Brian Scott Bennett was exhumed and investigators had their answer. YCSO, or Yavapai County Sheriff's Office, worked on Kathy Sposito's case for years and ended up asking for a grant from the state to use Parabon Nanolabs. And this is a lab that specializes in familial DNA. So they were able to take that DNA that was all mumbo jumbo combined together and pull it apart and determine that one of those strands, while impossible to confirm, but undoubtedly comes from Brian Bennett. And I want to say that it's impossible to confirm that he's the one who killed her, even though it's most likely. But there's always the chance that for some reason his blood ended up on the wrench prior to it being used on Kathy. However, because of his history, which we know because we've talked about it already, everyone who has any sort of authoritative stance on this feels confident saying that it was Brian who murdered Kathy.
I mean, he has a three name name. That's like serial killer 101.
Oh, man.
To jail, straight to jail. We're done. Case closed.
Get out of here. So at the time of Kathy's murder, Brian was, as we said, 16 years old and attending Prescott High School after moving from Kentucky. Kathy was murdered in 1987. 3 years later, in 1990, Brian attacked another woman on the same trail at the same time of day. She was camping with her boyfriend, and one of the mornings she decided that she was going to go hiking by herself down Thumb Butte Trail. She had been gone for only a few minutes when Brian snuck up behind her, struck her with a rock, and raped her before he then ran off into the woods. She wisely called the police and reported the assault and had a sexual assault kit done that collected samples. And then this case also went cold. 2 months later, Brian was at a party in Chinco Valley when he followed a girl into a bedroom after she had gotten tired and wasn't feeling super great from drinking, and she wanted to lay down and take a nap. He followed her into the room, locked the door behind him, and then tried to rape her. Others at the party heard her screaming and struggling, and in order to help her, they kicked the door down.
Yep, we love it. We love it.
Well, those are the people we all need in our lives, okay? Brian initially ran away, but because people knew who he was later arrested and then acquitted because there were conflicting stories as to what happened because everybody was drinking. And in case anybody listening is not aware, acquitted means that he got charged with a crime and then he was found not guilty.
Oh, good. If only it was this day and age, then there would be like security cameras all over the house, things like that.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know who your audience is as well, but like, I don't know. I always hear this like, rape is a sex crime. No, it's a crime of power. It's a power trip.
I
So
can see that.
it's not about sexual gratification. It's about overpowering, dominating, degrading, So this guy's fucked up in the head if we didn't know already. So there's that.
Yes, I agree.
2 months. He can only wait 2 months. 2 months.
Yeah. And these are only the people that we know about, which I know I was saying it over and over again last time. We're going to come to. So, listeners, we're going to come to that part, put a pin in it. So, then finally, in June of 1993, Brian kidnapped a woman while she was leaving the local post office by threatening her with a knife and forcing her into his car. He then raped her, which, as I was doing some research again, I found out that he raped her multiple times. Like, it wasn't just a one and done thing. It was like he would take her to a location, attack her, and then make her get back in the car, and he would just keep driving and then do it again.
Oh my God.
So this woman got super, super lucky because as he was driving, he got pulled over for a failure to dim his headlights, and she was able to escape while the cops had him pulled over. It was reported that Brian told this woman that he wasn't able to let her go alive because she had seen his face, which I think is a pretty common thought for people who commit really heinous crimes, is that, once this person knows them, then they're like, I gotta get rid of you. I wanted to keep you around. I wanted to do the right thing. I wanted to be good to you and let you go, but I gotta get rid of you now. You know what I look like. Which is,
They don't have the same logic as us, so they think probably they're doing someone a favor by doing that.
yes.
Also, like, I forget where I heard this, but it was like, I don't know if it was a female police officer or what, but she said, even if someone's pointing a gun at you to get in a car, run zigzag. Who cares if they shoot you? The second you get in the car, you're dead.
Yes.
Not get in the car.
Do
It
not go
doesn't
easy.
happen.
Fight, scream, and if you must,
Even
this is
if you
my.
get shot, even if you get shot, at least you're alive and you're shot,
Yeah.
like.
My big thought is that if I'm ever like in a physical confrontation with someone and I think they're going to kill me, like, do everything I can to get as much of their DNA embedded in my body as possible. Nail, claw, scratch, bite, swallow, like,
You're getting fucked in this day and age, bro.
yeah, I will take you down even if I'm going down myself.
Oh my gosh, I saw a case where she was being held in his house and he let her use the restroom. She touched every inch of the restroom with her fingerprints. She was like, "Hey,
Smart.
y'all, find me, find me." I was like,
Smart.
"Girl, yeah." She had to escape, not because they found her, but because she escaped the house and was running, and this cute old lady was like, "Come in here, we'll call the police."
Oh, that's heartwarming when somebody's like, I believe you and I'll help you.
Yes, here, that's another PSA. Believe the rape victim, okay?
Yes.
I don't
Okay,
know why
so
you have to say that in this day and age, but we do.
I know it sucks. Okay, so just to like recap here. There's four victims. Kathy's the first. We have a woman named Renee, which, as I was like going through things, I was finding her labeled as like one of the other three victims. Like they kept attaching her name to different stories. And these are all like semi-popular news stations within Arizona. So I'm like, okay, which one's the right one? I don't know. So I'm just gonna like unattach her name from any of them. So we have the second woman on Thumb Butte Trail, the woman at the party, and the woman from the post office. We know for sure Brian attacked the third and the fourth woman. The
Our theory is that they're not the only victims as well, so.
there's there I'm convinced there's more. So we also know that Brian had clearly some trouble going on in his life. He dropped out of high school in 1988 and then was briefly in the army for a year. He was previously convicted of forgery and served 3 years of probation for that. And he also committed some other violent crimes that he was charged and then acquitted for. He absolutely had a police record before he especially attacked the last two victims, the last two known victims. The break in the case occurred for the first two in 2017 when they found that the DNA collected from the scene at Thumb Butte Trail were linked. So the woman who was attacked the second time and Kathy, the DNA from the sexual assault kit and the DNA that was left on the wrench matched. Then in 2020, when investigators were able to use familial genealogy to trace back the DNA, they received a notification that both Brian and his brother matched the DNA that was collected from the scenes. And they also found that the DNA matched Brian's daughter, who was born in 1988, by the way.
Ew.
So she
Oh.
He was 18. Homeboy was not even out of high school yet.
I think him having a daughter is the most disturbing of this case. Is that okay? I don't know. The fact that someone thought him endearing enough to procreate with when he's in the midst of his trail of bodies, it's just like, whoa.
It's hard to see, but I think something that's interesting that you mentioned the last time was how he seemed like he was both organized and disorganized. And so he might have been very present in one area of his life and disconnected in another. And
Yeah, oh
I
yeah, I
mean,
was thinking, the double life, because He's organized because, of course, he knows what works. So he goes back to the trail. He hits her right away, incapacitates her. He does the same schlep or whatever he's doing with the rape right away. He has the same method, same organization, same location. That's very organized. So that's what makes me think he definitely has some control. But what we've learned is that even if you have control, it still leaks out. You still poison your loved ones if he has the capacity for love or whatever, you know. So it still leaks out. You can't hide, you can't, you know. So.
So because the DNA was linked to Brian and his daughter, they were leaning more towards Brian. This unfortunately led them to the knowledge that in 1994, Brian had moved back to Kentucky, and on January 27th of that year, he used a 22 caliber pistol to kill himself. So this then began the really complicated process of getting permission to exhume his body. And once they were able to do that in March 2023, they were able to conclude that the DNA from his exhumed body matched the DNA found from the sexual assault kit and the blood found on the wrench to kill Kathy. In addition to this really unfortunate things that happened, Kathy's parents passed away. Her father passed away in 2010, and her mother passed away a few years later, which means that both of them died before they had answers to what happened to their daughter, which I think is really heartbreaking. But as someone also pointed out to me, that if you believe in like the afterlife and all of that, they're with her. They no longer need to know what happened because they have her back. So that is, while heartbreaking, also beautiful.
Yeah. I think when you see Cheyenne Watts's parents, Chris Watts, who slaughtered his entire family, they definitely believe in that. They have faith in everything. And it just amazes me that they have such peace about that they're going to be together with her again, that they're here helping victims go through the same thing. They're actually healing people instead of it's just, I'm going to cry. Oh my gosh. Like, to be able to do that is because I, from what I've heard, I'm not a mother, but like losing a child is so devastating. Like most couples divorce over it because you can't console each other because you're both going through the same thing. Like it's very extremely hard. So for you to get through that and then help other people, oh my gosh. And I bet those two that, you know, didn't know about her death probably died from heartbreak waiting. They're like, where? What's going on?
As we've mentioned, the information that we have here are the only cases that we know that Brian Bennett was involved with. However, based on what we know, like psychology-wise, when it comes to
His
really
profile.
heinous individuals, they don't start with their most violent crimes. It has a smaller, I don't want to say less violent because it's still violent. It's not good. It's not less bad than anything else, but it's not as not as emotionally troubling as murder. So you have like the lesser crimes, and then they build, and they figure out what they want, they figure out what they're doing, and then they build from there. And then they kind of start getting desensitized to where that level is, and then they have to build to be able to still get that high. And
Right. It's like Because the dark triad of serial killers is one of them is being a pyro, and they don't start burning down a skyscraper. They start tiny little fires. But I think it's like the balance where it's like they get the high, but then they also have to build their confidence because they don't really have the skill set to pull it off yet. So it's like high confidence. Oh, now I can pull off this big thing now because they need it because they're psychopathic. That's the only way they feel anything. So that's why it has to escalate. It's inevitable that it will escalate, and we've already that's proven in science on psychopaths anyway. I don't know if he's confirmed or not, but yeah.
Yeah.
Escalation.
So, yeah. So because we understand that this is not how killers normally work, they don't normally start off killing someone and then pull back from there. I think it's safe to assume that there are more people out there that he acted out towards, and they either just never reported it, or when they did, it was just brushed off.
Well, that's what makes me think with the girl who got the rape kit, if she hadn't, it would never gotten have solved. Like if she had taken a shower or something, never would have gotten solved.
Yeah.
And just that tiny amount doing something, putting it in the system, reporting it, did something.
Yeah. And that leads me to my next point is that you don't know what information is going to help. Even 30 or 40 years later, like in this case, you don't know that we talked about being a puzzle piece at the very beginning. You might be the puzzle piece that fits this whole thing together.
Yeah,
And
you can be the one that finally solves the case.
yeah.
Because it's not like, I think what most people think with true crime is that there's one finally huge fact that just nails everything to the wall, but it's a lot of tiny little pieces. Like this case was a miracle it even got solved, but the reason it
Yes.
did is because a bunch of tiny little pieces were put together. Nothing alone would have nailed him. Nothing. So,
Right.
all.
Yeah. So, before we kind of wrap up here, I also want to mention that I found the obituary site online. There's no obituary for him, I'm assuming because of these things that have come to light. But they had a headstone there, and there were some really awful comments from people about, saying that, of course, this guy's a monster, he's evil, his headstone should be destroyed. And of course, all of these came after Kathy's murder was solved. And I want to make a note that I agree. He did these really awful crimes. He's a horrible person, but we don't need to hold that hate in death. And you can hold that, I guess, for his life, but he is no longer here. He is no longer able to harm people.
Like
And
we were talking about last time, the whole reason we talk about this stuff, or the reason I love true crime, is to prevent it. A lot of it can be prevented if we talk, if we're aware, like rape, touch, inappropriate touching, like things can be prevented. They can escalate and we can see it happening. So it's like he's not hurting anyone anymore. That's the most important thing. He's
yeah.
not, he can't hurt anyone anymore.
And just showing a little bit of compassion. I mean, my thoughts immediately go to, okay, if these people are being so outwardly aggressive online to someone they don't know and someone they've never met, they're probably the same way for people in their own lives, whether they are intending to be that way or not. And showing just a little bit of compassion to someone who is clearly having a hard time might be the difference between them going down a path of destruction and going down a path of healing. And I think everyone needs to be a little bit more compassionate. I think there's room for all of that.
I think even with because I can see where people are upset, but it's like we've served justice and that's the best it gets. But the thing is, it's like it's up to us now to live every day. And we have to think about who he left behind. He has a daughter, okay? She's hurting. Even though he was a horrible person, kids love their parents. Who else did he leave behind? His brother? He's a puzzle piece. He died and he was a terrible person and he left damage, but he affected his loved ones and they lost him. So it's like it's really hard to take sides and be angry at this or that, but it's like it's complex. Humans are complex, you know.
That they are.
So,
All right, to wrap up, in the wise words of Sheriff Rhodes, through the work of dedicated volunteers, numerous detectives, and many partners who gave their time and their hearts to solving these cold cases, four women were given either closure, peace, or validation. And I really wanted to end with that because, in the end, peace and validation and closure, I think, is all that we're really looking for at the end of the day. And having that when something really terrible happened in your life, even if it comes 30 or 40 years later, it still rings true and it still rings authentic. And I really, really wanted to include that part at least.
yeah. I mean, one of my biggest fears, and I think it's universal, is that when you're gone, you're forgotten. Like, what if something happened to me? Like, one of my biggest fears is caves. I have a panic attack stepping in foot and like a single foot in a cave. I can't stand it. And I was like, what if I died in a cave? And like a lot of caves, people die and they don't ever get found, you know, like you disappear. And one of my fears is like no one cares enough to figure out what happened to me. Like, and so when I see cold cases where even though they're dead and their family's long gone, it's like someone cared enough. Like you can still love someone when they're gone. It's
You can
romantic
still some
and
yeah.
special, and it's so amazing how humans are like the capacity their hearts have. I love it. I love
Yes.
it.
Caitlin, thank you again for doing this with me a second time. And listeners, thank you for listening.